The following is a Learfield presentation of the Vanderbilt Sports Network. Commodore Hour is on the air. Over the next hour, we'll discuss the latest around Vanderbilt athletics and hear from players, coaches, and administrators. Commodore Hour is brought to you by Gupton Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Springfield, Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt Athletics, and by the Middle Tennessee Ford dealers, built Ford tough. Now, here are your hosts, Andrew Allegretta and Kevin Ingram.
Well, good evening and welcome to the Commodore Hour on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield. Andrew Allegretta here with Kevin Ingram. Coming up tonight, Coach Clark Lee joins us at 6:30. In just a few minutes, Vandy soccer coach Darren Ambrose plus will preview Vanderbilt versus UConn this weekend with our keys to the game. But first, Kevin, let's touch on Vandy and Georgia. Look, it's a tough day for sure. Nobody is dodging that, but I don't think there's any doubt what we saw at Vanderbilt Stadium a couple of days ago was a Bulldogs team that certainly can win the national championship this season. They are one of those teams for sure.
Yeah, I don't think there's much doubt about that. Kirby Smart's team was really, really impressive. They made you pay for mistakes, and they did that to Vanderbilt in the first quarter. 35 first quarter points, and you know, they just looked the part. Being down there on the sideline and seeing it up close is like, wow, this team really does look like a national championship contender. But yeah, just one of those days where it felt like things really snowballed in the first quarter, and Georgia took advantage of it. JT Daniels was only out there for a short time, but he was impressive, and the defense certainly has to be, if it's not the best in the country, it's right there. And it'll be interesting to see how their season goes as they make their way through some of these tough SEC games, especially the game against Florida that'll be in a few weeks. And if they get to Atlanta and maybe it's Alabama on the other side, how that might go. But it promises to be, I think, for that program, a really good one. And for Vanderbilt, it was kind of I said on our update this morning that was sort of a progress report on where you are for Vanderbilt. You get to see what your team looks like against one of the best teams in the country and one of the best collections of talent in the country, and you find out you got a ways to go. So yeah, it was a tough day on Saturday.
You know, I think one of the things I'm interested to talk with Coach Lee about is, to your point, this is a measuring stick. This is where Vanderbilt is at this particular moment in time versus a team that can win a national championship. How do you use a game like this to help you get better without being overwhelmed by the film? Mm-hmm. There's got to be a delicate balance there. As far as Georgia is concerned, just to touch on them for one last second before we turn the page and talk more specifically about Vanderbilt, you know, I'm fascinated about Georgia's offense because the talk of the conversation so frequently is Georgia's defense, right? They've got one of the most menacing defensive lines in all of college football that starts, as we talked about ad nauseum on the broadcast, with Jordan Davis. They're 6'6", 350 nose guard that can run 20 miles per hour. He is a freak of nature. He is one of the best players in all of college football. But this Georgia offense, with their stable of running backs, which all of them are elites, JT Daniels, who looks fantastic, and a pretty darn good crew of wide receivers, they score fast constantly. I think their average time of their scoring drives is like 2 to 2:15. You don't talk about their offenses all that much because so much is paid to their defense with Kirby Smarts and the athletes that they have on that side of the ball, but they've got enough weaponry on offense to carry them through some of these really competitive games as well.
I think so, too. And when your backup quarterback is Stetson Bennett, and you could bring him in, and he looks as maybe he could start for about half the teams in this league, it's a pretty impressive group. But, yeah, you know, the running – Georgia's like running back you, and we saw a little bit of everybody there. But really the guy that stood out to me was the freshman tight end, Brock Bowers. And you see – and this is something I want to ask Coach Lee about, too, is the evolving tight end position, what we've seen just in recent years. I mean, that guy's big. He's 6'4 and 230, but runs like a receiver and got to the end zone multiple times. I thought he was really impressive.
Yeah, it's a fascinating position to look at, especially with a couple of players, like you said, that Vanderbilt has seen over the past couple of games. Look, there's a talent gap there. That's obvious. But at the same time, I think one thing I'm suspecting we'll hear from Coach Lee is you continue to need to make sure that you take care of your own business, right? Because a couple of times they fielded a couple of kicks that they probably should have just taken fair catches on. Mm-hmm. Ziegler had that fumble early in the ball game. Not to say it would have swung the tide of that game all that much, but look, you're trying to figure out exactly how to play your best version of football, and there were times when Vanderbilt still didn't play its best version of football.
Yeah, those decisions made it tough a couple of times. Sometimes the best thing you can do is take the fair catch, take the football at the 25. You can't fault guys who are trying to make plays, but sometimes the simple thing to do is the prudent thing to do in those situations. And there was one later in the game where kind of pinned in along the sideline, and it's a tough decision on whether you try to field it or let it go out of bounds, and you get even better field position. So, yeah, those are things to clean up, too, on special teams again this week.
All right, so we'll talk about all of that with Coach Lee coming up at 6:30. We're going to take a quick timeout, and when we return, we'll talk with the head coach of Vanderbilt soccer, Darren Ambrose. They scored a fantastic 3-0 victory over Alabama just the other day. They've got a big matchup with Missouri coming up on Friday, plus some conversations about how he feels like Vanderbilt soccer fits in to the market with Nashville SC as that program has continued to rise here in this city. We'll step aside, come back in just a couple of seconds. Darren Ambrose, the head coach of Vanderbilt soccer, on the other side of this timeout on the Commodore Hour, part of the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
Welcome back to Commodore Hour as we move our way through this hour on a beautiful Monday in the Music City. We are joined by Vanderbilt soccer coach Darren Ambrose, his team off a 3-0 win against Alabama on Sunday, the first SEC win for the group. And I guess, Darren, you know, how big for the confidence just of the whole team, what was that victory yesterday?
Oh, it was big. There's no doubt. I mean, I think the kids have played well. We've performed pretty well through most of the season. And come up on the wrong side of a couple of scores. But, you know, it's tough with a younger team to not lose confidence and when they're playing well but just not finding a result. And yesterday, I think it came together pretty well. I mean, we've defended well, scored some terrific goals, commanded most of the game for the most part in possession. So, yeah, I think it's a big lift for us, and the kids deserve it. They've worked so hard, and finally a few things dropped their way.
Peyton scores that goal in the first half in the 15th minute. Was there just like a collective sigh of relief that one finally went in after three games?
Yeah, I mean, it's we got up, you know, obviously we've gone ahead in several games, actually, and, you know, MTSU came back and bit us on two counterattacks. But, yeah, I think it was. I think it was a sense of, okay, we can do this, let's go. Mm-hmm. I think it gave us a bit of confidence, and I think it was great for Peyton, too. I mean, a kid's been on two ACLs. This is only... She played in a freshman year a little bit here and there, and we could see the potential she had. And then the next 2 years she spent recovering from ACL. So your heart goes out to kids like that. And to see her work as hard as she's done, to see her score a goal like that, I mean, she's one of the best headers of a ball probably in the league. And she's been close a few times.
Yeah.
But to see it drop was meaningful for a lot of reasons. One, yeah, it gave us a little boost. And then two, for her, just for her confidence. She's been in great positions this year and not scored when she knows she should have and had opportunities. So, yeah, to see one drop in for her in particular was really pleasing.
I know you talked a little bit post-game about feeling like you defended along the back line better and you defended in front of goal better. I wonder if you could explain that for us.
Sure. I mean, there's been times this year when we've kind of shot ourselves in the foot where we've not made tackles when we were supposed to make tackles. I mean, it's a fundamental part of the game. It's about winning your individual battles. It's me against you, and I'm going to stop you. And there's been moments when that's happened and we haven't been tough enough, or we've miscleared a ball, or we've lost sight of a player for 2 seconds, and that kid shows up and scores. And in watching us yesterday and watching the game back this morning, we won the majority of our tackles, the overwhelming majority, which is tough to do. There were very few opportunities where they had any time or space in and around our goal mouth, which is, again, is a big part of defending. So I think we've tightened up a little bit. I think the kids have learned that's what you want to see, right? You want to see growth. You want to see, well, we've made mistakes. The mistakes once, maybe twice, but after that they become a habit. So can we not have that be a habit? And I think what's encouraging is some of these kids are getting better, and the performances are showing. So we've defended well yesterday.
You know, there's a lot of different players that I think we could probably introduce fans to. I know you and Kevin talk a ton on the SEC Network Plus broadcasts. So you've talked about your players, you know, fairly ad nauseum, but I want to give this particular listening audience a new opportunity to meet some of your players.
Yeah.
You're led in scoring by Reagan Kelly.
Yep.
I think it's 6 goals so far this season.
Yep.
Introduce this particular audience to her, what she's done so well, and who she is as a person as well.
Reagan is probably the fiercest competitor we have right now on this group. She bleeds black and gold. The kid, every time she walks off the field, she looks like she's just left a war. I mean that. There's blood, sweat, and all kinds of stuff on that kid. Grass stains. She's on her rear end as much as she's on her feet in a game, which tells she just throws her body into everything she does. You know, we talk about defending. She's an attacking player, and she scores goals. But let me tell you, if you watch her closely, that kid will tackle anybody for anything. And I think about her as a freshman, and we actually talked to her about, you got to learn how to defend. And here we are as a senior, you know, applauding the effort she puts in. I mean, she's everything you want about college athletics. She's a fierce competitor. She plays with a smile on her face. Yeah, she doesn't like to lose. She hates to lose. But she will pour everything she's got into what she's doing. She's a fun kid to be around in practice. As a coach, she's kind of that kid you lean on and you can go to, and she'll raise everybody else's level, and she'll demand of everyone around her. So it's, you know, it's not really a coincidence she's leading us in scoring. Yeah. But also, she's, to me, her legacy will be her toughness. When she leaves here next year, it will be her toughness and her effort. And we felt this year, at the beginning of the year, we weren't probably at that level. And she made a case and bringing that in front of the team and saying, we've got to be tougher and harder. And she lives it. And it's easy to ask others to do it when you're living it, and she does.
Those two goals she scored yesterday were spectacular. The first one on a cross, she slid it and knocked it in, and then the second one over the top and just caught it out of midair and knocked it home. I mean, those are awesome.
I don't think anyone really realizes how difficult the second goal she scored is to execute. You're on a full run. A ball's coming across your body, and it was her left foot she took out of the air, and she only had about 3 yards of space to land it behind the goalkeeper. And that is, honestly, one of the most technical finishes I think I've seen. I've seen a lot of great goals in my time, but to see someone take a ball out of the air on full volley and full stride with pressure on her back, with a goalkeeper advancing, I mean, that was pretty special.
And on a play like that, I mean, I guess the temptation would be to let it bounce once and try to settle it and then knock it in.
Yep.
What about that part of it for her on that particular play?
And that's the thing about Reagan. She's so instinctual. Mm-hmm. You're right. A lot of kids would want to take their time. A lot of kids wouldn't understand the situation and the pressure and how little time you really have. And if, in fact, you know, there are moments I've seen where that would have been the case. But she just knows, and that's what makes her such a threat, is that she can read situations 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds or more before anybody else, and she knew exactly what she was up against and had the confidence to do it with her left, which is a weaker foot, deftly lift the ball over an oncoming goalkeeper, which I thought was spectacular.
I just want to go back to what you said a second ago about her, about the fact that it sounds like she was the one that kind of pushed this team forward through a difficult spot early on this season. When was that? And I don't know if you were in the room when that particular conversation happened or not, or what tangible benefits you saw from your team after that particular conversation.
Yeah, no, we lost to Duke, which, again, no shame. They're one of the top 5 teams in the country, and we gave a great performance in the first half. But we had lost to Western Kentucky, and there's some circumstances that were pretty difficult, you know, from the way the game was called and some of the things that happened that were out of the players' control. And we walked away with, you know, but then we lost to Duke, and we haven't lost 2 games back-to-back in a long time. I couldn't even tell you when it was. I'm sure we have. But Reagan made a point to me, you know, after the Duke game, you know, I've not lost back-to-back games here. We don't do this. And we started showing clips of what we call tough. This is what it is to be a Vanderbilt soccer player. This is it. And we showed clips, and a lot of them were Reagan sliding around and throwing a body into people like bumper cars. And we started to illustrate it and give a picture rather than describe what it means. This is what it looks like. And there were others too. And there's other kids on the team. But it was that moment she and I talked and after that game, and we started to bring that out. And then we got it right at Lipscomb, and it was a tremendous performance. And then MTSU, it dipped again. And at that point, we showed more clips and we showed where it wasn't happening. And again, then it changed again. And Reagan has been the one that every time is the one who embodies it. And I think it's better to show than it is to talk about. And she shows it.
Visiting with Coach Darren Ambrose as we continue with Commodore Hour. More with the coach after this on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield. Welcome back. This is the Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us on a Monday night in Nashville. We are visiting with Vanderbilt soccer coach Darren Ambrose, Kevin Ingram, and Andrew Allegretta. And Vanderbilt off a win yesterday against Alabama. And one thing we talked about going into the game was corner kicks, and maybe mixing it up a little bit. You did try some other people, especially on that left side. How'd you feel like it went?
Well, great. You know, we normally Elwell, Maddie Elwell is key in serving, and we know Amber can serve a ball. She's one of our most technical players. And we wanted to mix up the services because I think it's easy to gauge after someone hits every corner kick, you know where it's going. So, but the other thing is we took off a little of the structure. We took away a little bit of the structure and said, hey, Peyton, Matty Allen, you two are the best headers of the ball in the league. We're just going to put it up in the air and you're going to go find it.
Yeah.
And left it a little bit to them to, you know, look, generally we want to serve it in this area and you guys can go get it. And that's exactly what happened. So change the service, gave a little bit of freedom to them to go find the ball as opposed to trying to be a bit more planned out in what we were doing. And it goes to show you, best laid plans, right?
Yes.
You can try all you want, but I think there's so much of this is the player's game. We train things and then it's up to them to make those decisions. And we kind of took away some of that plan and said, hey, you guys try and get in this area and go find it. And that's exactly what happened.
Well, I've got a handful of questions that are somewhat outside of your game yesterday against Alabama. So if you've got specific ones for Alabama, I'll let you fire away first.
Go right ahead.
If not, I'm going to deviate for a second.
Yeah.
First off, the growth of Nashville SC in this town has been very interesting.
Yeah.
It's been fun to watch. The crowds there have been spectacular. What they're building in town for a new stadium is wonderful. I'm just curious your insight on how that's impacted Vanderbilt soccer. Maybe it's gauged some interest in recruiting or just the general vibe of having something like that in town for your players to be a part of.
I think long term, it's going to be tremendous when the stadium arrives and we've got another real soccer facility in town. I think from a product they put out there, they're fun to watch. I know Gary, the coach, quite well, and he lives 4 or 5 doors down from me, actually, down in Nolensville. So I think they do a great job. Their marketing, we've actually had some people at our games. We've heard from people that came to our games who are, you know, Nashville SC fans too. So there's a little kind of drip in our direction from a soccer and promotion of the game. I think that longer term that may turn into something even bigger. You know, and that's our goal, is to somehow partner and join. And there's some social media things that we're trying to do. So it's anytime the game of soccer grows in this town, I'm all for it, whether it's a men's pro, women's college. I think it's the sport. And they do it right. I've been to loads of games. I've got my season tickets for the stadium already. I'm excited to go and support and to watch. But it is a great event. It's a fun product. They play well.
Is there a possibility, you think, down the road to maybe have a college tournament or something like that at that stadium? I was thinking about that driving over here. It's like, that would be a cool thing to see on
that turf.
It would
be a fantastic Final Four site. Mm-hmm. Nashville would be a Women's College Cup site. It would be a tremendous place. So, you know, hey, you know, never say never, right?
Exactly.
I would push for that once the stadium is up and running. I think we must become eventually, at some point, a destination for that event.
When's the last time it was not in Cary, North Carolina?
Yeah, great question. I don't know. I think they've got season tickets. I mean, it's, you know, they've had it in California. They've had it. I'm trying to think of the sites. We've had it in College Station. I'm trying to think of the places that it's been. But predominantly, that's typically where it ends up.
So the key question clearly is, if you live 4 or 5 doors down from the head coach of Nashville SC, if a great game is on or a great match is on, are you guys texting back and and like someone's running over to the other person's house or what's going on?
No, because we're both in season half the time. So and his season goes a lot longer than mine. I've got to be honest with you. He's on the go from pretty much February to October. So, you know, after the season, I'll try and, you know, try and find him and grab some social time with him. We met over summer a couple of times. So.
All right. So you had a fantastic career at USC Spartanburg, correct?
Yes. Now USC Upstate.
Correct.
Yes.
Give me the best moment on the field for you and that team when you played there.
There are a couple. The one was actually my senior year in the college, in the conference final. We went down 2-0 after 11 minutes. And, you know, there was not one of us that thought we were going to lose the game. There was just no way. We won 4-2. And it was funny. We went down 2-0, and it was like, well, you know, we'll get there. And we did. And it was, again, as a senior, you know, it's a long time ago, but I still remember then it was a special moment to win the conference championship on your home field in that manner. That was a big one.
At the time, you guys were Division II.
Yes, we were.
You were a Division II powerhouse, which kind of
speaks to
that internal confidence that you guys were going to come back regardless.
Oh, yeah. So my freshman year, my first game was against the University of South Carolina, and we beat them 1-0. And I had no idea what that meant. Like, you could have told me that, you know, again, we had just beaten this pan at the time. They'd been in the Final Four 2-3 years earlier, and here we are. I'm fresh off the plane, literally, like 3 weeks off, and we beat South Carolina. I didn't realize it was a big deal. I was like, well, we won.
That every year.
We won, you know, and we went toe-to-toe with Clemson as well, who had won a national championship a few years prior to that. And we were fortunate to have an enormous nucleus, which is more than a nucleus. The majority of the team were international guys from all over the world, anywhere between the ages of, I was 18 to 25 years old. It was almost like a men's semi-pro team, to be honest with you. So it was kind of where I'd come from in England, the level of playing with men. And it was kind of like playing. It wasn't like playing in college for me. It was like playing with a men's team.
Was that a major change in culture going from Sheffield to Spartanburg?
Oh, God, yes. It was culture shock, like the whole thing. I'd heard, you know, again, I back in those days, I mean, you didn't travel as much over to the U.S. as we do now. And I just think about, you know, even going through McDonald's and driving to get gas. Language was just different. And yeah, we speak the same kind of language in a way, but let me tell you, back then it was a lot of mix-ups and a lot of if a lot of people couldn't understand me. My wife at the time, my girlfriend after my freshman year, looked at me blank a lot of times when I was talking to her.
One of the things I found most interesting about you, and I would have thought you were a rock and roll guy for sure, but that you're into outlaw country,
yep.
Which I grew up listening to that with my dad too. Tell about that and how that became part of your life.
When I came over here, and I lived in Memphis for a while, and I would come to Nashville. This was back in the 90s, and people would make fun of me. They're not Englishmen and country music, right? You never heard this kind of thing. I'm like, well, funny enough, my dad actually was part of a country. It works in England. It was called Country and Western. Mm-hmm. So he was part of a country and Western band, and he played an acoustic guitar and could sing. So I grew up listening to Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson and I all those guys. I mean, if you pull up my Amazon Music now, I've got I basically have a playlist that is Outlaws. And you know, so everyone would joke with me, even when I came back to Vanderbilt this time and took, country music. And I was like, yeah, well, I like this, 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 and this. And I could recite and sing half the songs. And even now, and I tell the story of sitting in the airport 2-3 years ago, maybe, going recruiting, and I'm sitting at Tootsie's, and there's a guy, you know, in the corner, and he's playing You Picked a Fine Time to Leave Me Lucille, which is a Kenny Rogers song that Waylon Jennings made. I heard the Waylon Jennings version. And I'm sitting in there, and I just emailed my dad, and I said, Dad, I'm the only guy, as an Englishman sitting in Nashville's airport listening to this song, and I think I'm the only guy that actually knows the words to this song. And I had to let my dad know, because his passion for that has actually affected me pretty deeply, and my music choices are pretty eclectic. It's all over the place, but there's a foundation in country music.
Which I guess leads me to this question. If he could sing, can you?
No.
And will this lead to a future duet with Stackhouse out at Hawkins Field for the national anthem?
I heard Stackhouse sing, and I told him to ditch the golf lessons and get singing lessons. But I can't. My daughters can both sing. In fact, my eldest daughter sang the anthem at a basketball game, and she sang, ironically, she also sang the anthem at the Duke Baseball Regional 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. She can sing. And in fact, she's sung at Fenway. She's at Northeastern, and she sang the anthem for the Northeastern Boston College baseball game at Fenway. So the singing gene bypassed me, get one, and both of my girls can sing, I can tell you.
All right. Before we let you go, Darren, a quick thought on Missouri. You'll see them on Friday night here.
Yeah, Steph's a new coach. A lot of respect and for Stephanie. I've known her a long, long time, as most of us have in this profession, in this peer group. They'll be organized. She's a very good coach. They'll have some discipline in how they defend, and they're dangerous on the counter. We know some of their personnel, but I think it's up to us to come out on the front foot and assert ourselves and build off of what we've done. I think our kids are confident. But they also know that the reason that they've had some degree of success in the games we have and played well is because they assert themselves. And we have to do that again on Friday against Missouri. But looking forward to it. I think we're in a good spot. Some of our younger kids are slowly kind of taking steps forwards, which is, you know, two-thirds. I look at that we've played 16 to 17 players, and 10 of them are freshmen and sophomores. And two-thirds freshmen, sophomores in a league that's filled with super seniors and seniors is a big ask. And those kids are standing up tall right now, and I'm proud of them for that. And they've learned, and I hope they'll continue to learn. And as our future continues to grow and back to competing at the top of the league.
Darren, thanks for the time. Appreciate it, as always.
Thanks, guys.
All right, we'll let you get back to Waylon and Willie and the boys. It's Coach Darren Ambrose joining us here on Commodore Hour. When we come back, we'll talk football with Coach Clark Lee. That's coming up next on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
Welcome back inside the McGugan Center as we continue our conversation on this Monday evening as head coach Clark Lee jumps on the headset here and we get set to talk a little bit Vanderbilt football. Andrew Aldegretta here with Kevin Ingram. Coach, as always, thank you for taking the time. I guess let's start our conversation here. I was struck by one phrase that you used post-game with Kevin, which was you felt like your guys played a guarded game. Can you explain what you're talking about with that and why that's significant to you?
Well, it's kind of rooted in a belief in what we're capable of, you know, and so what I saw in our play was tight and timid. I think particularly on offense, we didn't have that kind of loose, fun, excited, you know, personality that we had against Stanford. I feel like, you know, even the way the game was coached at times felt guarded, and I think that's natural in the way it started out. Obviously, when you're struggling to move the ball and you're turning the ball over and, you know, you're giving short fields to the defense and, you know, we're putting ourselves in a bad position. I think naturally, you know, as a play caller, you're just looking to do anything you can to hold the ball for a little bit, to possess the ball and to give the defense a chance to breathe. And so I think we regard it in general, but a lot of it is rooted in this belief of what we're capable of. When I looked at the film, I saw certain guys that were competing at a really high level, and I saw other guys that played a tight game and played a guarded game. And that's a recipe for bad things, is particularly when we're not taking care of the ball and we're making poor decisions.
When you're sort of in that moment, and say in the first quarter, and things are snowballing a little bit, what can you say to the guys, or what sort of approach do you take to try to get them going back in the right direction again?
I spent a lot of time with the defense on Saturday. Part of that's because Coach Minter went to the box, and I wanted to make sure they had a presence with them on the sideline, but also is because, you know, we were needing them to hold the line. That game got out of hand really quickly, and they were put in challenging positions. Now Georgia was finding success, and there are things for us to improve upon, just in terms of the tactics. But I wanted to make sure they felt support, and it was really just more of a challenge. And I think at the point where it's 28-0, you know, you don't have time to make a choice as to whether or not you're going to go back out and compete. You know, we have to make that choice. That has to have been made in our preparation. And so for me, it's just putting that in the forefront. It's keeping them fighting together. It's just pushing that fighting spirit through to them. And I thought in the second quarter, they played better. They played well enough to keep the game where it was. And I think there's, again, for as awful as Saturday was and as hard of a day as that was for me and for our players and our staff, there are areas and things that we can pull and we can build on from that experience. And so certainly we're upset, and we've dealt with that now as a program, as a team. We're ready to flush it and move on. learn from it and grow. But you know, I also want to point out the positive aspects where you had guys that were absolutely winning their one-on-ones, were absolutely competing tooth and nail. And you know, we need to get, you know, all 94 on that page. And when we do, again, we'll find out what this team's capable of.
I don't mean this question simplistically. I don't mean it to tee you up for coach speak either. But listening to you talk after Stanford, listening to you talk now, it certainly feels like there is a deep belief that the guys on the field are capable through execution, through hard work, through effort, and all of that sort of stuff. There is another level, it feels like, genuinely in your heart for these guys to play. Like, you believe these guys on the field are very capable of being successful on Saturdays.
I do. And obviously, you know, I'm with the team every day, but you build relationships and you build a level of belief, you know, but also I know this, you know, talent is one thing, and the talent gap that exists in some games will tip in our favors, and in some games it won't. But the talent gap only tells so much of the story. What we're interested in is performance. So talent versus performance. If you can be a team that performs at its potential consistently, then you're going to beat teams that you're maybe not as talented as, because talented teams sometimes dip. And so, you know, for me, that the fight here is to find that potential. What is our highest level as a team, and how do we perform with the consistency at that level so that every week we're measuring our best self against the opponent? And that's when this becomes fun. Right now, you know, we're inconsistent. We're not playing complementary football. So we're not having, you know, our all three phases firing at once. And then, you know, there's a psychology behind it too. And I think that's what's becomes the biggest challenge is like, you know, getting these guys to let go of all those things that interfere with their performance and just strictly focusing on, hey, I'm going to go out, the ball's going to be snapped, I'm going to have a one-on-one, I'm going to compete as hard as I can compete, and I'm going to win. And when I don't win, I'm going to learn from it and grow, and I'll win the response. And I think, Andrew, when we get to that point, we're going to be proud of our performance. That doesn't mean, you know, that we overcome every talent gap that exists right away, but it means that you walk away from the game saying, hey, this was, you know, these were the one or two small things that we could have done better that make this play here, make this play there. Or it's the vision. It's the one score game in the fourth quarter, all the pressure's on the opponent, and you have complete confidence on your sideline that you're going to win the game. That's what we're looking for. And I do believe that is within reach. Obviously, coming out of Saturday, I couldn't, you know, I mean, you feel as far away from that as you could humanly feel. But again, that's part of the emotions of this experience, and it is emotional. And yet today it's about recalibrating and saying, all right, we're moving on from it. This is where we fell short. This is where it became a disaster, right? So, you know, not possessing the ball, making poor decisions. And I'm talking specifically in the kickoff return game. And that's where that got out of hand. And as we mature and grow as a team, as we mature and grow as a program, as I've become better as head coach and our assistants become better in their roles, you're going to see this program tighten down and make fewer mistakes and put more pressure on the opponent and hopefully find a level of consistency and performance that allows us to be competitive and fight to win games at the end.
All right, Coach, let's take a quick timeout. We'll be back in just a second. Continue our conversation with head coach Clark Lee. Final couple of thoughts about Georgia. We'll turn the page to UConn. All ahead, just a couple of seconds on this week's edition of the Commodore Hour, part of the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield. Welcome back here to the Commodore Hour. Andrew Allegret alongside the head coach, Clark Lee, as well as Kevin Ingram. Coach, there was something specific that I know Kevin wanted to touch on here, because a couple of times here this season we've seen some really unique tight ends, and I know he wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah, Brock Bowers is terrific for Georgia. We saw Trey McBride a few weeks ago at Colorado State. How have you seen that position change and become even more of a game changer over the years with, you know, so many of those guys so much faster and more athletic than maybe, you know, the traditional tight end used to be?
Well, you said it. I mean, it's become a – I mean, they're big, right? They're big guys that present issues in the run game, but now they've become so skilled as receivers. And we had a number of those when I was at Notre Dame that became, in practice, you know, when you're going good on good, they became the toughest matchup issues. And obviously Brock is a special one. I mean, and the threat those guys pose in the red zone in particular is big targets. Again, you can isolate them on smaller corners. You can throw the ball up, a fade ball up and let them go get it, jump and get it. Mm-hmm. It's just they can kind of box you out and body you up and score touchdowns. And it's certainly been a position of evolution over the last few years.
So I want to turn the page, talk a little bit about UConn from a couple of different angles. Kickoff coming up Saturday, Vanderbilt Stadium. It's a 6:30 kickoff. The first one is, obviously, they went through a change this season. Randy Edsall is no longer the head coach. Lou Spanos is now the interim head coach. Start with this. You were part of a staff at UCLA that, look, you guys did not turn over in the middle of the season, but you were dismissed before the end of the actual season and then coached one game essentially as a lame duck staff. I'm curious your perspective on not exactly what Coach Spanos is going through at this exact moment, but there's got to be a unique challenge about getting ready for a ball game with the uncertainty of the future in everybody's mind around the program.
Well, it is a challenge, and just like in everything, I mean, what we're doing at this level requires such a focus and such a precision, such an emotional connection, and when you start to introduce that level of change and disruption, distortion, it's hard to focus. It's hard to keep everyone's mind like in sync with what the mission is. I will say that I thought they did a really nice job against Wyoming, and so sometimes those things can be galvanizing, and in some ways it's there's less pressure around it, and so you're able to kind of free yourself up as a coach, and the players loosen up, and they find performance through it. But certainly, it's a challenge, and in having experienced it, it was tough. But that's what you sign up for. So,
I don't know if this is what you're kind of leading into here, and I'm not faulting anybody by any stretch. But have you noticed on film a sense of freedom in the way that UConn has played at the beginning part of the season, or the past couple of weeks, or is that just based on the one Wyoming game that you were able to take a look at leading up to this game?
Less a comparison from the year and just more an observation. Feeling like, I mean, Wyoming's a good team, and I felt UConn had their best performance, and so I don't claim to know the explanatory variables there, but could be something.
Visiting with Coach Clark, Lee, Vanderbilt, and UConn coming up on Saturday night over to the stadium, 6:30 kickoff. You mentioned earlier talking about decisions on kick returns in our opening segment. What are some of the teaching points for making correct decisions, especially with the rules being what they are now, where you can, if you fair catch a ball, even if you're not in the end zone, you can get it at the 25, and how that sort of changes the way of thinking?
I think the first thing is just when the strategy for the opponent is to hang the ball up in the air, we have to be ready to fair catch it. And the hang time was incredible. Excuse me.
I was going to say, if we need to give Coach a break, we could take a quick commercial if you need to, or if you think you're okay, we'll continue on.
I'm good. fair catching the balls that are hanging in the air because the coverage has too much time to get down the field. That's the first point. So you start to not bring those out because you're bringing them out into a coverage that's inside the 20. The one late is just a complete, failure of execution in the moment. That ball should be caught and not allowed to hit the ground. This is the one late with Cam Johnson. And then even as it's on the ground, if I field it with 1 foot out of bounds, it's still an out of bounds kick. And
right.
So,
yeah.
You get the penalty yardage there. We've addressed it. That's something we teach ahead of time, too. It's just disappointing.
Visiting with Coach Clark Lee.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back with more of the coach in just a moment. I'll give him a chance to get some water, and we'll finish things up. This is the Commodore Hour on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
Saturday night. Vandy, 24-21, your final. The Vanderbilt Commodores look to get back in the win column when they take on the UConn Huskies on West End. Pregame at 6. Kickoff at 7:30 on 93.3 Classic Hits and the Classic Hits app.
We're back on Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us on a Monday night in the Music City, visiting with Coach Clark Lee. Vanderbilt getting set to play UConn on Saturday night. I want to ask you about the punting in the Georgia game. Harrison Smith's been fantastic, but used the rugby-style punt most of the game. That really just kind of designed it to help out the return team a little bit?
Yeah, we struggled in the Stanford game with our coverage, and so being able to place the punt and keep the returner off rhythm is important. And you know, Harrison's good at that. The first one he hit Justin Harris in the air. Otherwise, it would have been a really good, net for us. He hit one late that was I think inside the 15, certainly maybe even inside the 10. And then you know, once you have them looking at that in terms of the angle, and the returner has to cheat up, now we can use his leg to go for the big punts. All in an effort to help the coverage unit, where we struggled in the Stanford game. It really felt like we needed to give ourselves a chance to keep them off balance.
One more about the game on Saturday. I thought Max Worship was noticeable in that game. Had 8 solos, 9 total tackles. How do you feel like he's progressing in that secondary?
Yeah, I mean, we got better, or we're getting better. I thought he and Brendan Harris played well. But yet there's, to me, I was talking to Jesse about this. We can tighten their eyes down and get them reacting sooner, reacting before the ball's thrown. So some of the perimeter screens and some of the, perimeter runs that get out on us in space are because we're waiting to see the ball, delivered or the ball handed and run before we're taking that space away. If we can anticipate it and see it through our key progression, we'll get there a little sooner and take the space away from around the ball. And I think that'll give us another level of performance, particularly on the screen, the perimeter screens, the first play of the game. They were able to get out on us a little bit. That's just another angle we can take to start to tighten some of those windows down.
Talking with head coach Clark Lee, Andrew Alacredic here with Kevin Ingram. Typically, coach, at this point in the broadcast, we do our keys to the game. Brought to the fine folks out there by Gupton, Chrysler, Dodge, Graham, Jeep in Springfield, serving Middle Tennessee for over 60 years, Coach. I figure since we're sitting here, there's no reason to have us guess on it. Why not go to the source? Your keys to the game for UConn would be?
Well, I mean, this is going to be focused on Vanderbilt, right? I mean, they've shifted personalities a little bit on offense. There's a little more tempo to what they're doing. They've played 3 quarterbacks. The one recently is the best athlete of the three. He adds some elements of quarterback run to the game. Defensively, they have, you know, their strength is in the middle of their defensive line of scrimmage. And all that to say, you know, what I'm interested in seeing is Vanderbilt come out and perform at our highest level. You know, part of our success is going to be in our ball security, right? We can't turn the ball over. And so, you know, being able to do that, using tempo on offense to create explosives, I'd like to see that in the run game, but I'd also like to see us get the ball up vertically in the passing game too. I thought that was something where, you know, we got a little back on our heels on Saturday and missed some opportunities to let, you know, Shepherd and Pierce go get the ball. Defensively, you know, this is going to be about managing the tempo and just doing a little bit better job of taking spaces away on the perimeter. We have to own the perimeter is what Jesse says. And so that means in the screen game, you'll see them stack receivers and run like smoke screens where they're step backs. And then off that action, they're going to run like a fake smoke and go try to test your discipline. You have to, we have to be really in touch with that and in tune with that. But you know, if we're able to play with ball security, if we're able to get some shots, some explosive in the run game and the pass game using tempo on defense, if we can own the perimeter, and obviously complement that with a special teams group that creates some plays this week, I think that'll give us the best chance to again play at our highest level as a team, and you know, we'd love to do that to a point where we're celebrating in our home locker room. We need that, you know, and that's going to be important to everybody.
Coach, thank you so much for your time. Unless you've got one last 30-second
question. Absolutely. Thanks a lot for the time. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Best of luck this weekend against the UConn Huskies.
Appreciate that. Good to see you guys.
That's head coach Clark Lee. Final couple of seconds here on the Commodore Hour. So you've just heard the key to the game from head coach Clark Lee. Once again, the broadcast will get started for us, Kevin, at 5:30. Five. Kickoff at 6 o'clock across the Vanderbilt Sports Network. Looking forward to, as always, jumping back on the air with you and Norman and the rest of the crew coming up on Saturday.
Yep, 6:30 kick on Saturday. And the following week will be an 11 o'clock kickoff at Florida. So that just came out today. So 11 a.m. Central Time in Gainesville.
And look, a bunch of stuff is going on across Vanderbilt Athletics. Make sure you're checking it all out, whether it's the soccer game coming up on Friday. You've got that one against Missouri. Don't forget that basketball. We just found out basketball starts their practices tomorrow with women's basketball.
Oh, man.
And then men's basketball on Wednesday, and then fall ball with baseball is here. They scrimmaged a couple of times. It was great to see them, by the way, get their rings between the quarter break for their runner-up performance against Mississippi State with Jack Leiter and the rest of the crew in attendance, mm-hmm. getting those rings with Tim Corbin. That was cool.
Yeah, that was some nice swag. Men's golf got their SEC championship rings. We saw Josie Barnes out there at the U.S. Open bowling championship trophy. So yeah, there's a lot of bling going on at the game on Saturday. That was cool.
That was fantastic. Happy for all of those guys, all of the wonderful performances. And, of course, once again, for fans, come on out to Vandyville. I've said this a couple of times. There's a lot of really hardworking people behind the scenes making these home games as fun of an experience from the moment that you show up here on West End all the way right through the kickoff. There's tons of musical acts and all that sort of stuff. There's great stuff going on at Vandyville, so make sure you check that out. All right, so that'll do it for tonight's broadcast. Don't forget to download the Anchor podcast. This is rebroadcasted tomorrow morning. And plus, we've got an original episode on Thursday. As always, our game broadcast starts Saturday at 5 across the Vanderbilt Sports Network. From Learfield, it's Vandy and UConn. Looking forward to it. For Kevin Ingram, Gus Wittekamp, and head coach Clark Lee, I'm Andrew Aldergutta. Thanks so much for listening, and good night from Nashville.
Thanks for listening to Commodore Hour. Tonight's episode was brought to you by the Middle Tennessee Ford Dealers. Built Ford Tough. Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt Athletics. And by Gupton Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Springfield. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation of the Vanderbilt Sports Network.